You're tuned to WAER Syracuse 88.3 FM. Good evening, I'm Chris Bolt, WAER News Director. Now back to State of Healthcare with St. Joseph's Mark Murphy and Loretto's Kim Townsend. Another changing reality is age. You know, and age means a number of things. Kim, you touched on it in terms of just baby boomers being maybe a unique healthcare customer mm-hmm. as there are more of them or more of us turning to 65 or older or what have you. People are living longer. Some are healthier longer, but chronic conditions go on longer. Alzheimer's is a bigger and growing deal. How is age, as we're experiencing it now and will in the decades to come, affecting healthcare?
So I think Kim appropriately mentioned the baby boomers, and I always remember the saying that the generation that brought Lamaze to childbirth is bringing a revolution to their care as they age. And that really is an important component. As the population ages, the management of chronic conditions becomes more and more of a focus.
Right.
Because of the geographic distribution of family members, mm-hmm. there's more focus in terms of maintaining independence and also maintaining independence on the terms of the consumer, of the patient. So that's where the challenge becomes, how do we manage the health system in order to support that? We want it to be patient-centered. We want it to be individualized. We want patients engaged. But we also know that the family unit that was in existence 30 years ago in terms of geography might be more geographically distributed.
So people aren't around.
People aren't around. The other challenge is, you know, with the aging of the population, the number of healthcare providers to provide that supportive custodial care is becoming more and more constrained. So having, just as an example, a home health aide go to somebody's home, that's one-on-one patient care. Typically, the home health aide has to drive to the patient's home. Within our system, the average distance between visits is about 12 miles. So you're driving 12 miles each way to see a patient. That's a very expensive way to provide care. And programs that are innovated, like the PACE program that Loretto runs, where actually the program kind of wraps itself around the patients, providing transportation, using daycare services, primary care, home care. Those are innovative programs that will help us maintain patients' independence in the home.
What might strike me in the nursing home setting is that you could just have somebody living with some needs for a long time.
Well, the average age in which people come into our system now is 86. So people are staying home until the very last minute when they can no longer be maintained in their home. And then they're coming in and they're very frail and they're very elderly. However, that doesn't mean that they won't live another 20 years. So we have a number of people across our system that are over 100, people even up to the age of 109. And so people are living longer. The practical consideration of that from a family perspective is you have people who are, you know, baby boomers who now have one living parent. So you may be 65, but your parent is still alive and you're supporting them, which really is affecting the way baby boomers approach planning for end of life, because they're planning for it because they're now going through it with a parent. Mm-hmm. I think another practical issue associated with it is just the financial piece. So people might have planned very well for retirement, but it probably wasn't a retirement that would end at 109.
Right.
So what we're practically seeing is more and more people who really you would never expect who spend down and then flip to Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So that's why some of the recent discussions around, you know, changing the way Medicaid is paid will have a potentially very detrimental effect, because half of the people in New York State who are on Medicaid are frail elders and disabled, mm-hmm. and those are people that are in our system.
Gotcha. So another changing reality is it seems like people have obesity and lifestyle issues and comorbidity with substance abuse or what have you. And a lot of the people in the healthcare system don't just have a broken leg or a heart problem or, you know, something that's a malady. They also have the term comorbidity, I guess, mm-hmm. works here. Mm-hmm. How is that impacting care at either level or at all levels?
Sure. So I can give you an example of how we've taken steps to address that. In the two programs that I'm going to be referencing is our primary care programs, but also our behavioral health programs. So what we do know is that unmanaged behavioral health issues like depression or other behavioral health-related diagnoses do have an impact on overall health and wellness. We mm-hmm. know that patients who have chronic conditions are more apt to be depressed. We know more people with behavioral health or psychiatric issues are less able to manage chronic conditions that they may have. So what we've done is moved away from having segmented areas of care where we would have a behavioral health program and we would have a primary care program. What we've done is integrated behavioral health with primary care. So mm-hmm. in our primary care offices, we actually have behavioral health specialists that can work with patients on things like depression. If there are medications that needed to be managed, particularly for their behavioral health issues, that's done in concert with the primary care physician who might be managing their diabetes. So it really is a way to integrate those two aspects and really manage in a team approach those comorbid conditions, because we know those are the most expensive patients in terms of accessing and utilizing the health system.
So we're learning a little bit about that you can't just treat the mental health issue or whatever that is, depression as you mentioned, or something
Correct.
Else, and then separately deal with the medical disease, right. condition, chronic right. condition, whatever
because,
that is.
Because we basically, when we do that, make the health system more complex.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's we're not really supporting the patient as they are moving toward, attempting to move towards health and wellness. We're actually bifurcating the provision of care and making the health system more complicated. And so that's where tying things together with a health record where mm-hmm. the behavioral health specialists are documenting in the same record as the primary care physician, that they're looking at each other's notes, that they have one medication list that everybody can look at to say this is what the most right. current medication list the patient's on, this is their most current monitoring of their condition. So collectively, it's more of a team approach than independent specialists or independent providers with a particular focus.
Is that you? Oh, go ahead.
And I was just going to say, generally, that team-based integrated approach of primary and behavioral care works. But when it doesn't work, then those individuals land within the post-acute system. Mm-hmm. So typically, if a person needs fairly intensive med management, they need some level of supervision, the mental health system hasn't really been given the resources to develop places for those individuals to go. Mm-hmm. So across Loretto, roughly 10% of the people we care for are not frail elders. They're people who are relatively young with behavioral, mental health, and substance abuse issues and chronic medical conditions. So it might be the 45-year-old IV drug user with septic wounds. It could be, you know, any number of those cases. And so I think that that's a situation where there's the opportunity for New York State, and I think New York State is looking at this, to create more supportive or supported housing mm-hmm. so that individuals don't have to be in a long-term care setting when it's really not appropriate for their needs.
Now, both of you talked about situations that, you know, could be described as comorbidity or what have you. Neither of you touched on lifestyle choices that also complicate things. Mm-hmm. How much in healthcare, as healthcare professionals, does it just drive you crazy that people sort of are bringing on their own maladies mm-hmm. or whatever the condition is, whether it's, you know, diabetes that develops from somebody who's obese, or heart conditions or vascular conditions that mm-hmm. develop because of either, you know, weight issues or smoking or those kinds of things. How much does it drive you crazy in healthcare mm-hmm. to see people basically hurt themselves so much?
You know, it is a factor. I think, though, what we try to look at is that their health choices are a symptom of a bigger problem. So when you have somebody who is struggling with their weight, who might have diabetes, and they don't understand really the connection between the choices they're making and the outcomes on their health. And I think that's where, you know, we as healthcare providers in the past would say, well, we're here to manage your blood sugar and your dietary choices. You know, we can provide you information, but your choices outside of this clinic or this hospital are really your choices. We know when we're moving towards managing populations, we have to change the way that we provide healthcare, the information that we provide, and also how we provide it. So St. Joseph's has moved towards providing care managers and health coaches for patients. Mm-hmm. So if you have a patient that has a particular challenge or situation, that the care doesn't end when they walk out of the primary care clinic. They actually have a care coordinator who will work with the patient to say, let's go, and what we call it is the kitchen biopsy. So we actually go into the patient's kitchen and say, let's look at your food choices. Let's look at your medications. Let's talk about how your choices are affecting your overall health and wellness. It's not a one-time intervention. It's an ongoing mm-hmm. relationship that we have to develop with the patient. And what we found is that the relationship that they have with healthcare providers is probably the major impetus for them to actually change their choice in terms of health behaviors. So that's, again, one of those transitions that we're undergoing. And we have approximately 200 health coaches that we employ at St. Joseph's just for specific populations in terms of managing patients and managing patients differently in that respect. Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sense of when you get to people who are in long-term care, how many, I mean, I don't want to make this sound too, I don't know, accusatory, but how many have literally brought on some of their own maladies that they're dealing with in long-term care?
Well, I think it certainly happens, and we try to work with people as well to kind of support the education and the coaching that they might receive in the acute care setting when they come to us. But I think also it's important to note, you really have to work with their families as well, because for every very well-intentioned individual, perhaps, who wants to try to get their blood sugar under control, there's the well-meaning family member that brings the box of donuts when they visit.
Right.
So it's a solution where sometimes you wind up having to really work with the entire family and the family dynamics. And it's complicated. Changing people's behaviors
sure.
are complicated. But I think as we look to move our system, you know, we call it a health care system, but it's really a sick care system. Mm-hmm. As we move it to a system that really reinforces keeping people well, it's going to be absolutely essential to figure out all the ways that we can help people change their behaviors.
Mark, you had touched a little bit earlier on technology. You know, we hear about robotic surgery, telemedicine. You know, I'm sure there's many other technological advances. Even electronic records is a technological advance. How is technology helping? And if patients seem to be, or the public seems to be, a little scared of it, what would you say?
I think I would say anything new can be unsettling, especially if you don't understand how it can help you accomplish the goals that you have. So I would say that most people are looking forward to maintaining their independence in their home as long as possible. And technology does offer some advantages for people to achieve that. So one example would be we have what we call, it's a medication dispenser. So you can load the dispenser with medications, and at pre-programmed intervals, it will dispense the medication, mm-hmm. have a little voice to say it's time to take your medication. medication. So if you're in early stages Alzheimer's or you're having memory deficits, it's a good reminder. We do know that 60% of hospital emergency room visits are predicated on medication mismanagement by people in
wow.
their homes.
60%?
60%.
Wow.
So this technology is a cost-effective way in order for us to help a patient maintain that independence at home. The alternative would be sending a nurse or a nurse's aide out to the home.
Right.
Much more expensive, much more costly. We probably don't even have the workforce to do it. But this is one example of that technology, as well as home monitoring of blood pressure, home monitoring of weights, home monitoring of glucose. So it's a way for us as healthcare providers to provide that support in terms of collaborating with the patient and the family to manage a patient's condition. And if we need to dispatch a home care nurse to the home or if we need to call the physician, it's done when the patient needs it, not expending resources mm-hmm. on a routine basis. So technology can provide those indicators of exacerbation of a condition, which helps us to intervene at the right time in a cost-effective way and meeting the patient's overall goal, which is to maintain independence in the home.
Mm-hmm. And in our PACE program, which, as I said, is a capitated program where we're supporting very frail people in their homes, we very successfully partnered with St. Joseph's Health to bring that remote patient monitoring technology into the home with the participants in the program, particularly those who would have the potential to be what we call frequent flyers mm-hmm. or high utilizers of emergency room services. So by providing and enabling that remote patient monitoring, we see their data on an ongoing basis, and we're able to intervene early and avert disaster in some cases just by having improved information on their health, on their health conditions.
Coming up, we can't ignore the efforts to repeal Obamacare. What might change in coverage and care? And how might things change for acute care institutions such as hospitals and the post-acute providers? You're listening to State of Healthcare on WAER 88.3 FM.